Okay, so here we go. So the Maril says, normally, when one of the avos dies, you know what, Yaakov, would you be able to grab me a chomesh? Tzvi, can you grab me a chomesh? Just from the back? Thank you so much. So normally, when one of the avos dies, it says Shana after every year. Meaning it says 127, it says by Sarimin, when she died, it says Mea Shana Esrim Shana Veshava Shanin Shnei Chayi Sara. That's usually what it says. Use the word Shana after every single time. That's usually how it goes. Or it just says Shana once. Just says at the very, very end of them, it'll say that Avram lived for 175 years, and I'll just say years at the very, very end of them. Vayechi is a little bit different. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Yisrael Shvasar Shana, he lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years. Vayimei Yaakov Shnei Chayov Sheva Shanin, 7 years. And then Barboim Umaas Shana, then 140 years. It should have said a word Shana right after the word Barboim. It should have been Sheva Shanin, Barboim Shanin, Umaas Shana. But it doesn't do that. It says Sheva Shanin, and then Barboim Umaas Shana. So why does it say Shana only after those two? Okay, first thing we have to send is like this. Rav Schwab asks another question. He says, Vayihi Yemei Yaakov. What does the word Vayihi mean? And behold, it was. And it was that way. Normally, the term that's used is by you. And it was, and at the end, then the final years of Yaakov Avinu was this amount of years, 147 years. By he connotes something like, all of a sudden, it became 147 years. We know that's not true. He lived 147 years. So what's the Vayihi that it's saying over here that's not Vayihu? Okay, so Rav Schwab answers the following. You go back to what Yaakov, when Yaakov Avinu had his discussion with Paro. So he stood him up in front of Paro, and Paro said to him, how long have you lived? So Yaakov says to Paro, the years that I have lived, 130 years, very small, and very bad. That was my life. But my life is nothing like the life of the lives of my fathers. Absolutely nothing like them. So my life is nothing like theirs. The term that's used is Yemei Shnei Migurai versus Yemei Shnei Chaye Avosai. So Schwab says the following. He says that there are people sort of live their life and they just see have things happen to them, and they just think to themselves, I'm messed over. For example, make a bad decision, you go to a place that you really shouldn't have gone to, then you end up saying to yourself, I'm not talking about you, Yair, but, you know, random people. A person says to themselves, you know what, it was a bad decision, you just live with it, and you go on. There are other people who wait until the very, very end, and at the end, they realize everything was all for the good. Everything was good. Yaakov had a massive problem. His problem was that he had a lot of things happen to him. I mean, he had Esav, he had the brachos where he had to lie to Yitzchak Avinu. He had Esav, he had Lavan, he had Dina and Shechem, I guess you can call it. Right. He had Shimon that was taken by Yosef. He had Yosef lost for 22 years. Then he had Binyamin, having to worry about Binyamin going back and forth. There were a lot of things that happened to Yaakov, you know, that were really crazy. They were really bad things, and he didn't know what to do with all of them. While they happened, he kept saying to himself, this is horrible. Ma'at v'royim him. Every single thing is absolutely horrible. I can't believe this happened to me. I can't believe that happened to me. And he kept saying, I can't believe this. He always believed in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he always thought this must be for the best, but he couldn't understand what it was that was for the best. He kept saying to himself, this can't be. How could this possibly be? Only at the end, when he sat in Mitzrayim, when he sat there and he had 17 years, when he sat there and Yosef was the king, the Shvatim were all getting along, everybody learned Torah together, and everybody was happy. The Shvatim were happy and holding hands and walking around together, and there was a ton of Puravu. Chazal say that he saw 600,000 of his own great-great-grandchildren. 600,000 within 17 years. I don't know if you guys have counted 600,000 before. It's a lot. It's a lot. 600,000 is a ton of people. So you have 600,000 people that he saw, ton of Buravu and a ton of Torah. They sat there and they said to themselves, that's ridiculous. How in the world did that all happen? Yaakov, you know, all of a sudden looked back and said, all that stuff that happened to me was all for a purpose. Now I understand that Dina had to be raped for Asnas to be there, for Asnas to go down to Mitzrayim to marry Yosef HaTzadik, so Yosef HaTzadik would have somebody to marry. Now I understand why Yosef HaTzadik had to go down there, because he had to be in charge of Mitzrayim and everything. At the very end, he realized it. So what is After those 17 years were up, all of a sudden he realized, oh, this is the reason why. Not Vayihu and they were all together. It only became a good life. It only became Yimei Shnei Chayav, real years of his life that he thought that everything was good at the end of his life when he realized everything was for the good. Then he sat there and he said, oh, that's 147. You know what that's called? Sheva Yipol Tzadik Vekam. Seven times a tzaddik will fall, and he'll get up every single time. Seven things happened to Yaakov Avinu. Seven things. You want to count them all together. Number one is the Bechorah, when he had to lie to his father in order to make sure to get that bracha. That's number one. Number two is Lavan, that he had to go to Lavan's house and he was tricked all with Rachel, Leah, etc. Number three is Esav. Number four is Dina raped by Shechem. After that, Yosef was sold down to Mitzrayim. Then Shimon was taken as prisoner and he never came back to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu didn't know what happened to him. And Binyamin had to go down to Mitzrayim. Seven things happened to him. Vekam. Every single time that Tzaddik gets up and he realizes that it's all from a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and he works on himself until he understands it all. That's why.
What about the incident with Tamar and Yehuda?
Tamar and Yehuda, there's an issue with that. We don't know how much they knew about it. And we don't know if they thought that to be a bad thing. Because Yehuda and Tamar were technically Yavam. He was technically doing evil. Technically. Now you're right, he did lose grandsons, Aaron Ono. He lost two grandsons, and that would be a problem. That would be something that you would normally talk about. It's not considered a tzara of Yaakov Avinu because they died for their own sins. Why that's not counted in the tzaras, I don't know. I don't know. I can't answer that. But there are seven times that Yaakov Avinu is supposed to sing. It says to Maril, Shevi Yipol Tzadik Vekam, Sheva Shonim, Varboim Umas Shana. And 140, the Gematria of Vekam, Kam is Kuf Mem, 140. It's Sheva Yipol Tzadik. Seven times he's going to have tzaros. They come and he's going to get up. And that's why the Shanim are separated to tell you there's seven times that bad things will happen. And they come and then you'll be get up. I had a gematria for this as well. Esrei Shana is in Shva Esrei Shana. The Esrei Shana in Apash is 202. Plus two for the words is 204 for tzaddik, for the tzaddik day out there. The Sheva Yipol Tzaddik, they come and then they'll end up getting out there for 140. That's that. Now, does anybody know what Yaakov Avinu's last words were? Last thing he ever said? Very nice. Shema Yisrael is usually what people say. Shema Yisrael, Shema Lekeinu, Shema Chod. He ended off with a Chod. That's not what he said. Anybody know? Peace out. That definitely wasn't in there. Not that I know of. I don't think there's a medrash on that. I'll tell you. Last thing he said before he died. Mikneh Asoda, I bought the field. Vama'ara Asherbo, in the cave inside it. Me'es b'nei Ches. From the children of Ches. And then he died. Isn't that a Pella? Last word he said was B'nai Ches? He's talking about a bunch of Goyim. That's the last words? It doesn't seem... Okay, Vade, he said Shema Yisrael Shem Elkeinu Shem Echad. Vade, he said other things. But the last thing that we have in the Chumash that he said are the words B'nai Ches. Why the B'nai Ches? Why the B'nai Ches? Why that over anything else? There's an awesome answer for this. There's an awesome, awesome answer. Rav Wolfson has one thing. He says that Ches is spiritual. It's beyond the world of seven. As we all know, six is a world that's Gehenna. That's why 666 is known by the Goyim as being something for Gehenna. Six is always something that's a little bit out there. Seven is the natural world. 7 days, seven Shemitah cycles, seven everything, seven always, there's seven Kochvei Leches, the star, the planets that you can see, that includes the sun and the moon, are seven altogether. That stands for nature. Eight is beyond nature. Hanukkah, beyond nature. It's beyond the natural form. Beyond the natural form. So the way Rav Wolfson says it is, his whole life was Ma'at Varayim. His whole life, naturally, didn't make any sense. Only when the Einei Yisrael Kavdu Mizoken, only when the eyes of Yisrael, when Yaakov Avinu's eyes were so old that he couldn't see the physical world anymore, he could only see spirituality. Don't tell me that it literally means he was blind. What's halacha? Can a blind man get nevuah? No. Blind man can't get nevuah, can't get prophecy. Because why? He's a Baal Mum. Baal Mums cannot get prophecy. So don't tell me it means he was literally blind and he couldn't see anything and he's walking around and he's like, Brian, Menashe, that you? It wasn't like that. He knew he could see, but he wasn't seeing physically. When he got older, he was so shalim, so unbelievable, that he wasn't able to see physical things. He would look at a table and he'd see the spiritual malach that was in charge of the table. He'd look at a person and he'd only see the averos or the mitzvos of that person. As we said about Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu went blind. He was blind for 120 years of his life? 120 years since he had the Akedah. When he was 37 years old, he went blind and that was it? For all the rest of his life, he was blind. He lived to 180. You mean to tell me he was blind for 143 years? And he was a Navi? You can't be a Navi and being blind at the same time. So what does it mean that the tears of the Malachim fell inside his eyes? That he couldn't see anything physical anymore. He had no shaykhus to the physical world. He would literally look at you and see your spirituality. Yaakov Avinu also got that. And when he saw Ephraim and Manasseh, what did he see? Did he see Ephraim and Manasseh? No, he couldn't see Ephraim and Manasseh. All he saw was, Ephraim's grandchildren are going to be with Yeravam. Manasseh's grandchildren are going to have evil people as well. Achav and Yehu. And Yehu and all those people. He saw evil people coming from Ephraim and Manasseh. He couldn't see a physical form behind them. He could only see the spiritual form behind these guys. That's what Yaakov was like. At that point, he was able to see beyond what the world had given him. He realized what was there, and he said to himself, unbelievable. And that's when he could say, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Voed. Yeah, what were you going to ask?
I think that's totally not Pashut Pshat and Yitzchak that he...
Kavta Mizokin?
Right.
It's a simple question. Can a Baal Mum be a Navi?
So, well, why is he a Navi? How do you know he was a Navi?
He had Nevuah. He was able to tell. He was able to tell about Yosef Atzadik.
Yitzchak?
Yeah, Rashi says it straight out. Why didn't Yitzchak tell Yaakov Avinu? Because Yitzchak saw that Hashem didn't tell Yaakov Avinu, so how could he? It's straight out that he had Nevuah. So we know he's a Navi, plus the brachos were all Ruach HaKodesh. I'll be Ruach HaKodesh. They definitely had it. He definitely had something. The question was what and when and where. We just don't know. I agree with you. It's not Pashut Pashut Shai, but if Schwab says it.
Is it totally blind?
The only person who was blind to get Nevuah was Bilam. And the reason why Bilam was Shasim Ayin, and he had a left eye that he couldn't see through, is because he had to have a Tahor part of his body to get Nevuah from. So that was that.
He sees.
No, he could only see the spiritual. So he could only see the spirituality of Yaakov. We spoke about this before in Parshas Toldos. He was looking at Yaakov and seeing the spirituality, and that's why he said, this person's from Gan Eden. What in the world is this person? And yes, he felt Yaakov, and he was able to feel the hairy arms. That he definitely could do. But he couldn't see past the spiritual world. He couldn't see physical things in this world. Very similar medrash about Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva, when he went into a room, Turnus Rufus threw him into a jail cell with two women that were Zonos, and he paid the Zonos to jump up on top of him. And Rabbi Akiva survived the night, and the Zonos were battered. He beat the living crud out of them. Beat them up. So when they came out the next morning, you know, Turnus Rufus turned to Rabbi Akiva and said, what's wrong with you? They force themselves upon you. Just be a normal human being. Just normal human beings. Oh, why didn't you just give in? There was nothing you could do. So he said, they were like cockroaches to me. If you had a bunch of cockroaches jumping up on top of you, wouldn't you push them away? That's what he felt. Rabbi Akiva could see them only as cockroaches. He saw them as tummy. He saw them as pure tumah. He couldn't see them as woman. He couldn't see them as beautiful people. So the concept applies by Yaakov Avinu as well. There's another thing. Ches stands for Chaim. The Ches over here, B'nei Ches, and the last word that Yaakov Avinu said, B'nei Ches, he stands for, that Ches stands for Chaim, for life. You gotta hear this word. This word is unbelievable. We all know from the Gemara and Tainus, I'm sure we've all done Tainus, I'm sure we've all gotten the Dalet of a Beis, the Gemara says, Yaakov Avinu lo mes. Yaakov Avinu never died. Yaakov Avinu never died. The Gemara says, what do you mean? They embalmed him. They made him into a mummy. They mummified him. He never died. So, do you know what the Mandarma says? Mandarma says, Mikra ani dorish. I'm darshaning a pasuk here. Darshaning a pasuk here. What does that mean? Did he die or did he not die? Mikra ani dorish. No. I don't care. That's basically what he's saying. I don't care. I'm just darshaning. Let me say what I want to say. What does that mean, Yaakov Avinu lo mes? Okay, I am not going to pretend like I know Kabbalah. I'm not going to pretend. If I knew Kabbalah, I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be somewhere else. I'd be learning Kabbalah. I can guarantee you that right now. I don't. I've never learned with Madonna. I've never learned with any of those. I have absolutely no shaykhus to anything that has to do with Kabbalah. No shaykhus at all. I will tell you little bits and pieces that I have from the Ramban, and that's about it. And then I'm going to go on to a totally different way of looking at this whole thing of Yaakov Avinu lo mes. First thing is like this. Rashi says, famous line, Svurin hayu shemes. They thought he had died. They thought. Now that's a crazy line. They thought he died. He didn't really die. They thought, they looked at him, they're like, oh, did he die? I think so. They think so, so therefore he died. It doesn't really say he died, by the way. It says, Vayesov raglav alamita, he gathered his legs to the bed, Vayigva, and he expired, Vayesov lam, and he was gathered to his people. Gathered unto his people. Raya, by the way, for Olam Haba from this pasuk. He wasn't buried yet, right? So what does it mean he was gathered to his people? He wasn't buried with his family yet. He was buried much, much later on. They brought him over to Eretz Yisrael. What does Vayesof Alamav mean? It means that he was gathered to his people in Olam Haba. he met up to the rest of his family in Olam Haba. He was with his people in Olam Haba. That proves to you there's a life after death. Even though the Torah never speaks about it, proves a life after death. Anyway, so what happens? That's fine. Ramban. And plus, by the way, could there be a bigger punishment if they thought he was dead and he really wasn't dead? And they put him in the ground? Covered him up?
Like,
oops. Like, didn't know until later on that he wasn't dead. That's the worst punishment ever. There couldn't be a worse punishment. So Ramban says like this. It doesn't say Vayamas, but he did say Hine Anokhi Meis, I'm going to die. So what does that mean? It goes like this. Normally, all dead people, our nikshar, their nishamos, are tied back to their shoresh in Shemayim. There is a root in Shemayim where that nishama comes from. And when a person passes away, the nishama of that person goes back up to its normal spot. It gets the greatest benefit you can ever imagine. It's a party up there. A crazy, crazy party up there. Good times. Nothing to worry about. And that person realizes that everything that happens in this world is really for the best. So he has no desire to come back down. What are you going to do? You're going to tell your wife you really love her? It's better for her not to know that, for whatever reason. What, are you going to tell your kids, be good? It's better for them not to have that warning. And you know that when you're up in Shemayim. So you don't want to come back down. You have no desire to come back down. There's nothing for you to do here. There's nothing you can get. The only time you have to come back down is if you swore to a person that you would come see him after you die. If you swear to a person, Sefer Chassidim says, if you want to make a deal with somebody, whichever one of us dies first, the other one will tell the person what Olam Haba is like. You can make that deal. You can make that shvua. You got to be very careful with it because you got to make sure you don't break your word. And you have to specifically mention when you do Hataras Nidarim every year, and when you do Kol Nidre, you have to say excluding this shvua. But you can do it, and the person will come back. It's guaranteed, says the Sefer Chassidim. Tried many, many times. The person will definitely come back to tell you something. But there's no reason for a neshama to want to. He doesn't want to come back. He has nothing to do with you. He sits there and he says, there's nothing for us. But Yaakov Avinu had no reason to go up to Shemayim. Yaakov Avinu got so much hana spiritually from his body, he had no reason to leave. What was he going to gain from being up in Shemayim? His body was just as good as being nikshar to the shoresh in Shemayim. To be kosher to that shoresh in Shemayim. It's the exact same thing for him. So Yaakov Avinu sat there and he said to himself, it's better for me to be down on earth. My body will be dead. I can't move my body. But my neshama will be with Klal Yisrael. Why? So I can feel their tzaros. I'll feel their pain. When something bad happens to them, I'll daven for them. If I'm up in Shemayim, I'm not going to daven for them. You know why? Because I realize it's for the good. I realize it's all for the best. I'm not going to daven for them. I don't think they need anything. But if I'm not in Shemayim, if I'm not sitting there in Shemayim, then that's a different story. If I'm not in Shemayim, I'll be with them. And if they need me, we can daven. Oh, guys, you can work. Think about it. We're called Bnei Yaakov. We're called Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because we daven to him. And he listens because he's there. His neshama is with us at all times. That's a pshat. How does he appear? This is just, he wears a lavush hashani. This machlok is how to read this Ramban, whether it means shani is in a very silken clothing or very, very special holy clothing, or if it means a very thin clothing, lavush hasheni, very thin clothing, in which it's almost transparent. Yaakov, you know, when he wants to appear on this world, he puts his neshama in a different type of a clothing that makes you see straight through it, so that he can come down and do whatever he needs. That, my friends, would be considered a ghost. That would be the definition of a ghost. But Yaakov would be able to come along, and plus, he's mummified. So he's a mummy that comes along as a ghost. That's the pshat. Yechidi Ador can do that. There was only one other person who appeared back down on earth after he died, and came and he made kiddush for everybody. Anybody know who it was? Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, the Babaji Rabbi is not yet. But I'll tell you if he does. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, what's Nasi stand for? Neshama Shel Yaakov Avinu. Neshama Shel Yaakov Avinu. Thus, Rabbi and Yaakov Avinu were the only two people that have that concept of Yaakov Avinu Lomes. Where they didn't die, there was no death to them. Now, there are other ways of keeping your neshama around. There are other ways of keeping the nefesh around. You know what it is? By tzaddikim, so that's different. They go straight to Shemayim. That's a different story. By Rishayim, I don't want to go into banning him like us, but Rishayim, hopefully we're not Rishayim. Rishayim, if you don't rot, then your neshama stays by your body. What would be the mila of doing such a thing? Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, the people of Egypt realized that if they keep their bodies from rotting, the neshama would still be around. They'd be able to talk to those neshamos, talk to those souls, and find out everything that's going on from the land of the dead. So what do? They mummified them. They made their bodies impossible to rot. So when they make their bodies impossible to rot and they mummify them completely, what happens? They make these huge shrines for them. And not only do they make shrines for them, they make huge open areas within those pyramids, in the different places where they have the dead bodies, they make huge open areas to which you can talk to the dead. Because the neshama is there. And anything you want to know, you would go inside there and talk to the dead and speak with them, says Rabbi Yonah Sanhedrin. And he says, that's why the curse of the pharaohs comes true. That's why any curse that the pharaohs have would be able to come true. Now, I will tell you, this is what I said before. The following two stories are absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. I shouldn't say absolutely. Most probably not true. They're both brought down. They're both supposed to be urban legends. But I will tell you, they're absolutely crazy stories. And Rabbi Yonah Sanhedrin says that the curse of the pharaohs is true, so I'm going to go through. The famous one that everybody knows about is King Tut, Tutankhamun. He's the famous child king, little kid king, sometime way before our Paro that's there in Mitzrayim. We don't know exactly when it was. They say that 7 years after King Tut was there, 7 out of 24 people were dead. 7 out of 24 people that were there at the time survived. I'm sorry. Everybody else was dead. So out of the 24 people, you had 17 people that ended up dying within 7 years.
From what?
They don't know. The curse of the pharaohs. Now, it happens to be the two guys who were in charge of King Tut, they both died. Whether or not that has something to do with the curse of the pharaohs or not, that I can't tell you. But there's something to do. There's something definitely that has to do with those people. The last survivor spoke out publicly against the curse of King Tut. Three things happened every time that he did. Three times. The first time he was in a car crash. Second time his son was in a plane crash. Third time his wife died. There is no substantial evidence for that. Meaning we don't know what the guy's name is. Spoke out against the curse of the pharaohs. He says, I was there and I never got hurt and nothing happened to me. Spoke out three times. All three times, nothing bad happened to him. Oh, these three bad things happened to him. I'm sorry. Exact opposite. But there's no substantial evidence for that. But I will tell you, in the 1890s, here's the problem with it. There's lots of issues with this. In the 1890s, four rich Englishmen bought a mummy by the name of Princess of Amun-Ra. In the end, there is no Princess of Amun-Ra. There's no such thing. There's a coffin of Amun. That's the only thing that there is out there, but there's no Princess of Amun-Ra. But they say they bought the Princess of Amun-Ra. On top of her cover, it said, awake from the dream in which you sleep, and you will triumph over all that is done against you. Those four guys, one disappeared, one lost an arm, one died, and one lost his money in a bank thing. I don't know what it was. Okay. One English businessman bought it from those four. He got into a car accident and his house caught on fire. He gave it over to the British Museum. British Museum kept it in their basement. There was banging, crying, things thrown around. There was a guard that died and a person that took a picture of it. A guy that took a picture of it ended up going crazy and committed suicide. You should know, the British Museum has no history of having this in their basement. Okay, that's fine. A collector bought it. I researched the whole thing. A collector bought it and a cultist told them to get rid of it, and this is how they know that it's not true. The occultist that they name died in 1891. But this should have been in 1911. I'll tell you why. The occultist said you should get rid of it, so he sold it to an American archaeologist. He shipped it to New York, and he shipped it on the greatest possible ship that he could ship it on so it wouldn't get lost. Gave it over to Captain Ernest Smith of the Titanic, and it was on the ship in the cargo when the Titanic sunk.
Oh, come on.
Here's the problem. No records, no histories, nothing says anything about it. That's the problem with it. I will tell you the following, though. The guy who made up the story, oh, I forgot, I didn't put down the name, darn it. The guy who made up the story was a guy by the name, I forgot what the name is, but you can look up the name. If you want to look up Princess of Amun-Ra and anything, whatever, they'll have the name of the guy. William Starst or something like that. I forgot exactly what the name is, but William something or other. They found the guy. What did this guy do? The guy went to the British Museum and he saw the coffin of Amun. And he made up a story about the Princess of Amun-Ra. That's what the guy did. He made up a story about the Princess of Amun-Ra. And he said that there was this that happened to it and everything like that. He started publicizing a day before he went on the Titanic that he had the mummy and he put it in one of his cargo shipments that he was shipping over to America. He started telling people that, but it never really was. He never really had a mummy. Then he went on the Titanic, this guy who made up the whole story, and sunk with the Titanic. That's true. That's 100% true. Crazy coincidence in that one, but there was no official mummy. I don't know what the curse of the mummies are and whether there is a real curse of the pharaohs and whether there isn't. Regardless, the Aros Tavash says it's famous. Famous, he says, that there were 300 people on a ship and the ship sunk. He's not talking about the Titanic. He was way before the Titanic because it had a pharaoh in on it. That's what the Aros Tavash says, Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. I believe the Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. What's shot? Because the nefesh is still around. They never rotted. So if the nefesh is still there, the nefesh has power. And that power is there to do crazy things to the people who make fun of the pharaohs. So the curse of the pharaohs is there. It's a different type of curse. But the curse is there for those who do go up against it. Alright. One last thing. Rav Schwab says a crazy thing. I should say one last thing about Rav Yaakov Avinu Lomes. Rav Schwab has a crazy answer as to what it means by Yaakov Avinu Lomes, the Yaakov Avinu never died. What does it mean, the Yaakov Avinu never died? He says the following. There are three partners in every person. Every human being who's born has three partners. Anybody know what the three partners are? Mom, Dad, God. Very good. You've done this before. Obviously seen the Gemara Neid on Daf Lamed Aleph. Mom, Dad, and God. So here it goes. Dad gives you all the white things in your body. For example, he gives you bones, nail, white of the eye, sinews, and a brain. The wife gives you five things that are red: flesh, blood, color of the eye, skin, and hair. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you Chochma Bina Das, Ruach Neshama, the way your face looks, eyesight, hearing, the way of walking, and speech. That's what they give you. That's what God gives you. Okay. She says the following. What does that mean that your mom and dad give you these things? Because it's not true. I think I have eyes for my dad, but the eyes should be for my mom. My skin is more like my mom. That works out really well. But I don't think I have the brain of my dad. I think I more have the brain of, combination of the both. Combination. What, it has to be this way? How does that work? So here we go. It says, when a child is born, he takes kochos from his parents. There are strengths that his parents bore into him, that they give over to him. And as long as the parents are alive, the father and the mother give over these kochos to the baby, and the baby adds on to those kochos with his own kochos, but deep down inside he always has those kochos from his parents. If his father was an Oved Avodah Zarah, deep down inside, he's an Oved Avodah Zarah. He can work on that and be better, but deep down inside, he's an Oved Avodah Zarah. If his father is a tremendous tzaddik, deep down inside, he's a tremendous tzaddik. He may knock himself down and become a Rasha, but deep down inside, he's really a tzaddik. He's got that koach from his dad within him, and so too with his mom. Those kochos are there. And you might suppress them, but they're definitely there. That is why children can die in the mabul. That's why the children of Dasa and Aviram were swallowed up by the ground. That's why children are sometimes punished. What did they do wrong? Because they're growing up with the kokos. As of right now, they have the kokos of their parents. And the kokos of their parents make them evil. And don't say, well, that's not fair. What do you mean it's not fair? It's not fair that it wasn't Rebel Yashiv. It wasn't born like Rebel Yashiv. Is that fair? No, everybody's given their own life. Shut up. Okay, that's the kokos. Once the parents die, those kokos go away. Those kokos leave him, and he no longer has the kokos from his parents. What happens by an orphan? What happens if his dad dies when he was in his mother's stomach? And his mother dies after the kid is born? What happens then? Do you know what happens then? God takes over. God takes over, and God starts ruling over the baby. God starts taking care of the baby and puts his own kochos into the baby. And God is going to do it instead. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's the father of the orphans. We're going to have to go a little bit like that. When it says Yaakov Avinu Lomes, it means Yaakov Avinu's kochos never die, even if he dies. Normally, if a father dies, his kokos are gone from that child. And the child is no longer like the father. When Yaakov Avinu dies, you still have those kokos within you. They don't leave. They're still there. And that's why we're called Bnei Yaakov, or Bnei Yisrael. Because we are Yaakov Avinu. Deep down inside, you have all the kokos that Yaakov Avinu gave us. The mysterious nefesh of Yaakov Avinu, the ability to learn like Yaakov Avinu, the ability to tell the truth truth like Yaakov Avinu. It's all there. It never dies. That never goes away, unlike the kokos that you get from your parents. That's what it means, Yaakov Avinu Lomais, that he never died and never got rid of it. You never got rid of it. I'm skipping something over here. We have to understand something about Ephraim and Menashe. I'm going to skip one part of here. We're going to go to Ephraim and Menashe. Yaakov Avinu looked at Ephraim and Menashe, and we all know the famous story. Ephraim was brought up to his left side, and Menashe was brought up to his right side. And we all know the famous thing that Yaakov Avinu switched his hands, put his right hand on top of Ephraim, and his left hand on top of Menashe. That everyone knows. The problem is what Yosef does. Yosef tries lifting up his hand and says, No, Dad. Ephraim's over there, Menashe's over there. And Yaakov Avinu answers back, Yadati bini, Yadati. I know, my son. I know. Don't worry. Gamhu Yigdol. He'll also be a great people. He'll also be a great nation, Menashe. But Ephraim's going to be greater than him. Says Rashi, because Ephraim is going to have a child named Yoshua. Menashe is going to have a child named Gido. And Yoshua is greater than Gido. Here's the question. What's Yosef thinking? You don't think Yaakov knew what he was doing? You don't think Yaakov, like, he purposely crossed his hands. Purposely crossed his hands. What's he really worried about? Does Yaakov Avinu really think that Yosef put the kids on the wrong side? What wouldn't Yaakov Avinu just have said? Can you just switch them around? Make sure Ephraim's on my right side and Yaakov's on my left side? Did he really think that that was the problem? Yaakov Avinu purposely put his hands the other way. So what's Yosef thinking? That's number one. Number two, Yadati bini. Yadati. I know, my son. I know. Very unnecessary. Very, very unnecessary. Very, very poetic. And very, very nice if you're in a play. Very, very unnecessary when it comes to the Torah. And then what's the... Well, how do you know Yoshua is greater than Gidon? What is this? It's a status contest? Like, Ephraim's greater because he's got one kid who's greater than the one kid of Menashe. What is this? What does that mean? So here we go. Yosef was a tzaddik yesod olam. Tzaddik yesod olam means the following. You're a man who lives in this world, and you're a man who learns Torah at the same time. He does both. He's able to live in this world, he's able to make tons of money and be one of the richest people alive, but he's also the greatest Talmud Chacham of his generation. Very few people can be on that level. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was on that level. Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avram were on that level. Rav Ashi was on that level. The Rambam maybe was on that level. The Rambam was an extremely rich man, and he's an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, one of the greatest of his generation, if not the greatest. There are very few people who are able to do such a thing, to be so great that you're mamish both. When his sons were born, Menashe and Ephraim took on those kochos. Menashe became the man of Olam Hazeh. And that's why he was the translator. He's always with Yosef HaTzadik. Ephraim became the man of learning. He sat with Yaakov Avinu all day long. Any day Yaakov Avinu wanted to learn, he sat with Yaakov Avinu and he learned with Ephraim. Sat with Ephraim the whole time. Who comes first? Yisachar or Zvulun? That was more chashuv. Who comes first? Zvulun. All the time. Smach Zvulun b'tzeisecha v'yisachar bo'alecha. In the brachos that he gives to all the shvatim, in Parshas Vayechi, first he mentions Zvulun l'chop yamim yishkon, and then Yisachar chamor garim. Zvulun always comes before Yisachar. Who came first? Yaakov or Esav? Esav came before Yaakov. Because Zvulun is more important. A guy who's able to learn inside this world and be in this world, that guy comes before everybody else. Now we have to understand that. Why? Why? But that was Yosef's svara. Yosef's svara was, Menashe comes before Ephraim. Yaakov, you know what's going on? What are you doing? Ephraim before Menashe should be the exact opposite way. What are you doing, Yaakov Avinu? It should be the exact opposite way. Zvulun. You just blessed the children. You're going to bless the children. You're going to say Zvulun before you suffer. So why are you putting Ephraim before Menashe? Why are you giving Ephraim your right hand and Menashe your left hand? It should be the opposite way. Yosef was like Yaakov Avinu. Why? Yosef had two mothers. Why do you have two mothers? Because he was born in Leah's womb. But what happened? Anybody remember? Leah prayed. Leah davened. And she switched. Chazal say literally, the ubers in each body switched to the other body. Till Yosef went to Rachel's womb. But Yosef is naturally Leah's child. But he was born from Rachel. He was the only Shevet like that. Because he was the only Shevet to have kochos from Leah and kochos from Rachel. What does that mean? Strengths from Leah and strengths from Rachel. Well, mother gives you her kochos, right? Tikkun Chatzos is made up of two different parts, Leah and Rachel. Leah stands for Sur Mira, turning away from evil. You ever notice anything about Leah's kids? Reuven changes around Maisa Bilha, Yehuda, Tamar, Shimon and Levi destroy the city of Shechem. They're all about Sur Meira, turning away from the evil, from the bad that's in this world. Not necessarily doing mitzvos, not allowing myself to sin. Leah's power is in turning away from sin, not allowing herself to sin. Rachel's power is Ase Tov, to always do good, to do tons of mitzvos and to add on to the mitzvos, to do more mitzvos. Yaakov Avinu had both. He was born an Ase Tov, and Esav was born Sur Meira. So who was supposed to marry who? Yaakov was supposed to marry Rachel. Both were Ase Tov. Leah was supposed to marry Esav. Both were Sur Meira. But what did Yaakov do? He took the brachas of Esav. So he became Sur Meira as well as Ase Tov. So Yaakov was both. So who do you have to marry? Both. He had to marry both women. But what was he, the ikker? Deep down inside, what was he? Deep down inside, he was Ase Tov. Yosef was both. He had powers of Leah and powers of Rachel. But deep down inside, where was he originally? Where was he born from? Not born from what womb was he born from. What womb did he start from? From Leah, from Sur Meira. So Yosef Atzadik was all about Sur Meira. Go down to Mitzrayim and don't sin. But Yaakov was all about Ase Tov. Do more and more mitzvos. Become better and better and better. Ephraim was born Ase Tov. So who do you hang out with? Yaakov Avinu. Menashe was Sur Meira. So who do you hang out with? Yosef HaTzadik. So when Menashe and Ephraim came over to Yaakov Avinu, and they go around there, says Yosef HaTzadik, maybe you think, Yaakov Avinu, that a Sur Meira is not as good as an Ase Tov. That doing mitzvos is greater than not doing averos. Says Yosef HaTzadik, they're equal. They're equal. A Sur Meira, if not more so. A Sur Meira is greater than an Ase Tov. A Sur Meira is more powerful than an Ase Tov, because somebody who can stop himself from doing sins is more powerful than somebody who can just do mitzvos. I've done both, said Yosef. I start off my first 17 years of my life as an Ase Tov, and since I've been in Mitzrayim, I've been Sur Meira. And I'm more powerful. I got more kochos from Shemayim from being a Sur Meira. Says Yosef HaTzadik, Sur Meira is greater. So he said to Yaakov, I know you haven't been in a matzav of Sur Meira. I know you haven't really gotten into Sur Meira. Switch your hands. The right hand belongs to Menashe. The Sur Meira is greater than the Ase Tov. They're definitely equal, but maybe greater than the Ase Tov. To which Yaakov said, Yadati Bini Yadati. I know Ephraim. I know Menashe. Bini is right in the middle. I know the Sur Meira of you, and I know the Ase Tov of you. But there's a big difference in Yoshua and Gita. Yoshua was an Ase Tov. An Ase Tov did all mitzvos, caused unbelievable things to happen, and from that, the miracles that he wrought for Bnei Yisrael, making the sun stay in the middle of the sky, fighting against all those nations in Eretz Yisrael, the miracles that he made happen were greater than any miracle that Gidon did. Now, Gidon was living at a time where people were worshiping Avodah Zarah, and his Avodah was Sur Meira, turn away. You're right, a Sur Meira can be greater than an Ase Tov. In this situation, it's not. The Ase Tov beats the Sur Meira. And in this situation, if Ephraim gets my right hand, Menashe gets my left hand, I'm going to leave it as that. That's the pshat, guys. But it doesn't mean for us, there's no such thing as an Ase Tov being greater than a Sur Meira. That a guy who sits and learns all day long is any greater than a person who's working the entire time. No such thing. Is it easier for the guy who's sitting and learning the whole time? Vade. No question. Because the guy's sitting and learning, what's he going to do? Well, what's going to happen to him? He might meet the secretary of the yeshiva. It's the only girl he sees all day long. That might happen. A guy who's in business has to really worry about people that are all around. He's got to turn his face the whole time. Close his eyes the whole time. Much easier to be an Ase Tov than an Sur Meira. That doesn't mean the Ase Tov is greater. It means the avoda for the Sur Meira is harder but you can be as great, if not greater, than the Aseh Tov. And that's the lesson that we have, that Zvulin always comes before Yisach. And Zvulin is always before Yisach. All right, guys, we'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos. Speak.